There's a moment in every man's life when he looks in the mirror and doesn't recognize who's staring back. Not because he's changed, but because he hasn't. Same thoughts, same fears, same stories, days bleeding into weeks, weeks into years, and nothing inside has truly evolved. It's a quiet kind of suffering, not dramatic, not loud, but corrosive. You feel it when you lie in bed at night, fully aware that something needs to break, and it has to be you. Destruction isn't always chaos. Sometimes it's clarity, and when life whispers that you've outgrown your current self, ignoring it becomes a slow kind of death. The version of you that clings to comfort, that makes excuses, that negotiates with fear, that version has to go, not fixed. Not improved, erased. That's the essence of Stoicism. Not decoration, not inspiration, but transformation. Real, irreversible change. The kind that doesn't ask for applause or permission. The kind that requires walking into the fire of your own weakness and deciding never to walk back out the same. Rebuilding yourself starts with destruction. And the truth is, most people won't understand why you've gone quiet, why you've disappeared, why you no longer laugh at the same jokes or sit at the same tables. Let them wonder. Let them label it arrogance, coldness, or ego. You're not here to be understood by the old world. You're here to become something the old world can't define. You see, every past version of you is a shadow. And shadows only survive when you keep standing in the same light. But once you move, once you shift, the shadow no longer fits. That's the first sign of growth. Discomfort, disconnection, distance. It's not a sign you're lost. It's a sign you're finally moving. And no, it won't be easy. In fact, it's supposed to hurt. When you strip away the layers you've built to survive, you expose what's real. And what's real is often messy, unfinished, and unprepared. But it's also honest. And from honesty comes power. Stoicism teaches us to endure, yes, but more than that, it teaches us to create. You don't just survive hardship, you shape yourself through it. You become the sculptor and the stone. You learn to subtract everything false until only truth remains. And that truth, your truth, is the foundation for a stronger self. So if you're listening to this right now and you feel that strange pull inside, a quiet voice telling you that your old self is no longer enough, don't ignore it. Don't smother it with distractions or numbing habits. Listen. That's the call. Not to change. Slightly, but to burn the script and rewrite your entire story. It doesn't matter who you've been. What matters is what you're willing to destroy and what you're brave enough to become. This isn't about revenge or proving them wrong. It's about silence, stillness, reinvention, not for the world, for yourself. And it starts today. Burn the bridges to your past. There's a reason why ancient warriors burned their ships after reaching enemy shores. It wasn't for drama. It was for clarity. It meant one thing. There's no going back. Only forward. Only through. That's the kind of decision you need to make when it comes to your past. Not to keep it close, just in case. Not to revisit it when things get hard. But to destroy every bridge that leads back to the version of you that tolerated less than you deserved. Too many people want to grow without sacrificing. They say they're ready for change, but still check the door to the past every night before bed. Still text that person they know they've outgrown. Still engage in old habits that feel familiar, even if they've become poisonous. But real transformation is ruthless. It doesn't allow nostalgia to become an excuse. It doesn't offer a return policy. It demands that you let go of everything that once made you feel safe, but now keeps you small. The past isn't just memory, it's momentum. Every thought you replay, every pattern you don't break, becomes the gravity that pulls you back into who you were. And Stoicism reminds us that we are not our memories. We are our decisions. Marcus Aurelius said, "You have power over your mind, not outside events." And that includes the way you carry your past. You can either wear it like chains or like armor you've outgrown. Burning the bridge doesn't mean forgetting what happened. It means refusing to let it define what happens next. It means stopping yourself mid-thought when you say, "This is just who I am," and challenging it with, "Who do I want to become?" Because until you sever the emotional attachment to your past identity, every new version of yourself will be built on a cracked foundation. You need to make your transformation non-negotiable. That might mean blocking numbers, walking away from people who've known you for years but never truly seen you, cutting ties with habits that comforted you in survival mode but sabotage you in growth mode. It means deleting, purging, erasing, not for revenge, but for renewal. Because if you leave a single thread connected to your past self, you will pull yourself back in when the pressure rises. And the pressure will rise. Change isn't a smooth climb. It's a collapse and a rebuild. And in the moments when you feel weakest, your mind will offer you old escapes dressed up as comfort. The relationship you shouldn't revive. The substance you swore you were done with. The patterns that made you feel numb and safe and stuck. This is when the bridges must already be gone. So there's no way back, only through. People will say you've changed. Some will say you've become cold, distant, harsh. But they're not talking to the new you. They're mourning the old version that was easier to control. Let them. It's not your job to drag everyone into your future. Some of them were only meant to know the outdated version of you. That's their chapter. Your next one starts when you stop rewriting the last. There's a kind of freedom that only comes when the past can no longer reach you. Not because it doesn't exist, but because you've built something stronger in its place. And once that freedom becomes your foundation, everything changes. Your standards rise, your habits sharpen, your boundaries become sacred. And that version of you, the one who used to apologize for being too much or not enough, disappears. You become someone who walks forward, not in fear of what they've lost, but in awe of what they're building. So ask yourself honestly, what bridges are you still afraid to burn? What part of your old identity still has a voice in your new life? And are you willing, finally, to silence it? Not with anger, but with clarity. Because the fire you light behind you is the same fire that will forge who you're meant to become. The power of walking alone. There's a moment when you realize that solitude isn't loneliness. It's power. And not the loud, attention-seeking kind of power the world tries to sell you, but the kind that builds in silence when no one is clapping, when no one is watching, and when your only audience is the mirror. Most people fear being alone because they've never taken the time to meet who they really are. They surround themselves with noise, opinions, distractions, anything that keeps them from facing the quiet truth of their own mind. But that silence, that stillness, is where the real transformation begins. Walking alone means you stop outsourcing your decisions to the crowd. It means your values are no longer dictated by approval. You don't dress for their compliments, you don't act for their praise, and you definitely don't live for their expectations. Instead, you create a life that's aligned with your own code, even if no one else understands it, especially if no one else understands it. Because that's the true test. Are you willing to walk away from everything familiar to become someone you've never been? We're conditioned to believe that being surrounded means we're doing something right, But the truth is, the crowd often forms around comfort, not conviction. It celebrates the easy path, the familiar, the predictable. And when you start thinking differently, living differently, when you start elevating, don't be surprised if that crowd fades. They're not leaving because you've failed them. They're leaving because you've outgrown them. And that's exactly what's supposed to happen. There is a sacred kind of strength that forms when you wake up each day and realize that you are responsible for your own momentum. No one's coming to save you. No one is obligated to understand your path. The Stoic understands this deeply. Epictetus taught that we should want things to happen not as we wish, but as they do, and to use what happens as fuel for self-mastery. That's what walking alone teaches you, that you are not at the mercy of circumstance, that your mind is the one place no one can invade unless you let them. When you walk alone, your steps become intentional. You're not pulled left or right by trends or expectations. You start saying no more often, not out of anger, but out of self-respect. You protect your time like it matters, because it does. You stop explaining yourself. You stop asking for permission. You start trusting your own voice over the noise of the world. And in doing so, you reclaim something priceless, sovereignty over your own life. But this path isn't without pain. There will be moments of doubt, nights when the silence feels too loud, when the absence of validation feels like rejection. This is where most people turn back. But this is also where real growth happens. Because in that space, you're no longer propped up by external support. You're standing on your own. Every belief is tested, every insecurity exposed. But with each step, you build something that can't be taken from you: self-reliance. Solitude forces you to confront your weaknesses without distraction. It puts a mirror to your ego, your habits, your flaws. And that confrontation is the birthplace of discipline. You don't get to blame anyone else. You don't get to wait for a better time. You face yourself, raw and unfiltered. And in that honesty, you either fall back into comfort or rise into clarity. When you learn to walk alone, you stop fearing being left behind. You understand that solitude isn't punishment, it's refinement. And once you master it, you become someone who doesn't chase, they attract. You don't need to seek validation. Your presence speaks for itself. And the irony? Once you reach that level, the right people start showing up. Not because you needed them, but because you no longer did. You see, walking alone isn't a punishment, it's a privilege. It means you're strong enough to lead yourself, to question everything, to destroy illusions and build convictions. It means you're no longer waiting to be chosen, liked, or saved. You've already chosen yourself. So if you find yourself walking alone right now, good. That means you're not following. That means you're not pretending. That means you're doing the inner work that no one sees, but everyone eventually feels. Keep going. The path may be quiet, but your future is listening. Because solitude isn't the absence of connection. It's the space where the most important connection is built, the one with yourself. Breaking free from weakness and comfort. Comfort is seductive. It wraps itself around you like a warm blanket on a cold morning, soft, familiar, and almost impossible to resist. But what makes you comfortable today often destroys your potential tomorrow. The Stoics understood this with brutal clarity. The more you seek ease, the more you weaken the very muscles, mental, emotional, and physical, that are required to endure life. And here's the truth most people avoid. If you don't deliberately break free from comfort, it will quietly become your prison. Weakness doesn't arrive with a warning. It creeps in slowly, disguised as rest, as reward, as I deserve this. But little by little, You stop pushing yourself. You stop challenging your limits. You start choosing the easy option. You say, "I'll do it tomorrow once." And suddenly, that phrase becomes your identity. You stop risking. You stop growing. You become a shell of the person you once dreamed of being, not because you failed, but because you surrendered to comfort. Comfort breeds stagnation, and stagnation breeds decay. When life stops testing you, you stop evolving. Think about it. Every moment that shaped you, made you stronger, sharper, more aware, didn't come from ease. It came from challenge, from discomfort, from being stretched beyond what you thought you could handle. That's where strength is born. Not in pleasure, but in pressure. The Stoics weren't just philosophers. They were warriors of the mind. Seneca wrote, "We must undergo a hard winter training and not rush into things for which we haven't prepared." He knew that without deliberate difficulty, the mind atrophies. The soul gets soft, and the longer you avoid resistance, the more foreign it begins to feel, until even the slightest challenge feels overwhelming. That's why you have to train yourself daily to resist the pull of comfort. Not because pain is noble in itself, but because it reveals something essential. Pain shows you where you're still soft, where you still have work to do, where you're still hiding from your own potential. And if you're brave enough to lean into it instead of away from it, you begin to rewrite your relationship with yourself. Breaking free from weakness starts with honesty, radical, uncomfortable honesty. You ask yourself, "Where have I gotten lazy? Where have I made excuses? Where have I chosen what's easy over what's necessary?" And then, without fanfare, without waiting for the perfect moment, you do the hard thing, not because it feels good, but because it builds who you want to become. Maybe it's getting up earlier. Maybe it's having that conversation you've been avoiding. Maybe it's saying no to things you once said yes to just to please others. Maybe it's finally committing to the work you've been postponing. Whatever it is, face it. Don't wait to feel ready. You won't. The feeling comes after the action. Confidence is the reward, not the requirement. Weakness isn't about being incapable, it's about being unwilling. And willingness can be trained. Every time you choose effort over ease, you reinforce a new identity. You become someone who acts in alignment with discipline, not emotion. And over time, that repetition creates internal strength. Not the kind that needs to be seen, but the kind that holds you steady when everything else shakes. Comfort wants you to settle. Weakness wants you to conform. But something inside you knows that you were not built for mediocrity. You were built to evolve. And evolution requires friction, resistance, sacrifice. The cost of growth is always discomfort, but the cost of comfort is your life. Don't be the person who looks back a year from now and realizes they're still in the same place. Be the person who looks back and barely recognizes who they used to be, because they had the courage to confront what was soft and replace it with what was solid. So take a deep breath and ask yourself, what area of your life have you allowed comfort to govern? What would happen if, just for the next 7 days, you did the opposite of what felt easy? What would you build if you stopped avoiding resistance and started using it? Because the path to your strongest self begins the moment you stop negotiating with weakness and start choosing what makes you worthy of who you want to become. Erasing the old mindset and programming a new one. Your life is a reflection of your programming. Not just the conscious choices you make, but the subconscious beliefs you've absorbed without even realizing it. The voices that shaped you in childhood, the fears that you never questioned, the limits you've accepted as just the way things are. And here's the hard truth. If you don't consciously rewrite the script running in your mind, you'll spend your entire life acting out someone else's story. Most people don't realize how deep the conditioning goes. It's in the way you talk to yourself when you fail. It's in the dreams you secretly believe are too big for you. It's in the way you flinch when someone disrespects you, but say nothing because that's what you've always done. These patterns didn't come from nowhere. They were learned, and what's learned can be unlearned. The Stoics believed that the mind is a tool, not a master. Epictetus said, "It's not events that disturb people, it's their judgments about them." And those judgments? They come from your programming. They come from the invisible code you run every day, often without your permission. So if you want to rebuild yourself, you can't just change your habits. You have to go deeper. You have to challenge the very beliefs that gave birth to those habits. But this isn't a surface-level change. It's a war within your own mind. Every time you try to think differently, the old program fights back. It tells you to stay small, to stay safe. It whispers that growth is dangerous, that ambition is selfish, that discipline is too hard. And if you don't silence that voice with conscious thought, it will quietly sabotage everything you try to build. Reprogramming your mind starts with awareness. You have to catch the thought as it happens. The moment you say, "I'm just not that kind of person," stop. Ask why. Ask where that belief came from. Was it a parent who projected their fear onto you? Was it a failure you never fully processed? Was it a comment someone made years ago that still echoes in your decisions? Dig. Because once you understand the source of a belief, you take away its power. Then comes the replacement. It's not enough to just erase. Nature hates a vacuum. If you don't install a stronger belief, the old one will return. So you craft a new narrative. Not a fantasy, but a clear, conscious identity rooted in who you want to become. You don't say, "I'm trying to be disciplined." You say, "I am disciplined." You don't say, "Maybe one day I'll be confident." You say, "I am building confidence through my actions." Every day you reinforce that new identity through repetition, through action, through thought. It starts small, catching one self-limiting belief and replacing it, then two, then five. Then you start building routines around those beliefs. You speak differently, you move differently, you stop tolerating the things you once endured, because the old mindset no longer feels like home. And that's how you know the shift is real. It won't happen overnight. You'll relapse. You'll hear the old voice again. That's normal. That's expected. But the difference is this. You'll notice it. And in that moment of awareness, you reclaim your power. You say, "No, that's not me anymore." And even if you slip, you don't stay there. Because the new program is stronger now. It's rooted. It's conscious. It's yours. One of the greatest lies you've been told is that identity is fixed, that who you are is permanent. But Stoicism teaches the opposite, that you are malleable, that your reason, your judgment, your philosophy can evolve, must evolve, if you want to live with freedom. As Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The soul becomes dyed with the color of its thoughts," which means your thoughts are not harmless, they are transformative, they shape your soul, they build your future. So ask yourself, what thoughts are dyeing your soul right now? What beliefs are shaping your daily choices? And most importantly, are those beliefs yours, or did you inherit them? Because until you confront the roots of your thinking, you'll keep watering weeds and wondering why nothing strong is growing. Rebuilding your life isn't about willpower alone. It's about changing the operating system that drives everything you do. And that change, it starts the moment you stop running on default and start designing a mind that serves your highest self, cutting off negative influences forever. Look around. Not everyone in your life wants to see you grow, and not everyone who smiles at you is a supporter. Some just feel safer when you're stuck, when you're doubting yourself, when you're easy to predict, easy to manage, easy to control. This is the hard truth most people avoid. You are being influenced constantly. The only question is, by who? Cutting off negative influences isn't an act of cruelty. It's an act of self-respect. It's choosing to protect the space where your future is being built. Because no matter how strong your vision is, if your environment is full of voices that mock it, question it, or drain it, you won't make it far. You'll end up spending your energy defending your growth instead of pursuing it. And that is a losing game. The Stoics understood the power of environment. They believed the mind must be trained daily, but also shielded. You can't train for war and party with chaos. You can't seek wisdom and surround yourself with noise. Seneca once wrote, "Associate with people who are likely to improve you." And that's not just a suggestion, it's a survival strategy. Because people plant seeds in your mind. Some plant courage, others plant doubt. And most people never stop to question what's growing in their mental garden until it's overrun with weeds. Sometimes the most dangerous influence isn't a loud enemy. It's a close friend with a weak mindset. The one who encourages your excuses. Who laughs when you try to change. Who pulls you back with subtle comments like, "You've changed," or "Don't take life so seriously." That's not humor, that's fear disguised as concern. And if you let it slide, you're choosing to shrink to make others comfortable. Cutting people off sounds harsh, but it doesn't have to be violent. You don't need a dramatic exit. You don't owe anyone a speech. You simply decide, "My energy is sacred. My time is limited. And if your presence costs me my peace, my focus, or my self-worth, you no longer have access. Period." This applies to more than just people. It's the media you consume, the accounts you follow, the shows you binge when you're avoiding yourself. Everything you allow into your mind is shaping your emotional climate. Are you feeding your focus or fueling your anxiety? Are you surrounding yourself with voices that elevate or ones that echo your old fears? One of the boldest things you can do in life is edit your circle with intention. You look at each connection and ask, "Does this person energize me, challenge me, inspire me, or do they just fill space?" If someone's presence in your life is based only on history, habit, or guilt, you need to reevaluate. Loyalty is earned daily, and your future doesn't owe anyone an invitation just because your past did. There will be guilt. You'll wonder if you're being too cold, too selfish, too distant. That's normal. That's a sign you're healing, because part of you has been conditioned to put others' comfort above your own evolution. But at some point, you have to choose, grow or please. You can't do both. Stoicism teaches us to live according to nature, and nature is honest. Trees shed leaves, snakes shed skin. The old must fall away for the new to rise. It's not personal, it's necessary. The same goes for you. You are not obligated to carry anyone who refuses to walk, and you are not required to keep explaining your growth to people who are committed to misunderstanding it. There will be people who misunderstand your silence, who think your distance is arrogance. Let them. You're not walking away from people. You're walking toward who you're meant to be. You're building an environment so strong, so aligned with your values, that anything out of sync simply falls away. So take a moment. Look at your circle, your inputs, your habits. Ask, "Who would I become if I stopped letting these influences into my mind? What would I build if I guarded my peace like my future depended on it? Because it does. Building an unbreakable routine for growth. Growth doesn't happen in a burst of motivation. It happens in the quiet hours, through repetition, through structure, through a routine so solid, so intentional, that it becomes impossible for you to drift back into your old ways. If your days are chaotic, your life will be too. And if your habits are random, so will be your results. That's the hard reality most people avoid. Success isn't about intensity, it's about consistency. An unbreakable routine is more than a schedule. It's a philosophy. It's a decision to stop waiting for ideal conditions and to start shaping your environment around your goals. Because you can't rely on willpower alone. Willpower fades, emotion fluctuates, but discipline, built through routine, is what carries you when nothing else does. The Stoics were obsessed with routine. Marcus Aurelius started each day reminding himself that he would face selfishness, ingratitude, and irrational behavior, and still chose to meet the world with integrity. That wasn't by accident. That was training. That was repetition. That was a man who understood that to lead others, you must first master yourself. And self-mastery begins with structure. So ask yourself, what does your routine say about your priorities? Not your wishes, not your vision board, but your actions. If someone filmed your day from the moment you woke up, would it be obvious that you're building something powerful, or would it look like you're just surviving? An unbreakable routine means there are non-negotiables in your day. Time to move your body, time to still your mind, time to work deeply, deliberately, without distraction. It means you don't wake up and check your phone first thing. You don't scroll before you've centered yourself. You don't let the world flood your brain before you've heard your own thoughts. And this isn't about perfection. You don't need to do 10 hours of productivity rituals to be effective. What you need is simplicity, clarity, repetition. Wake up at the same time. Have a clear morning rhythm. Know when you'll train, when you'll work, when you'll disconnect. And most importantly, stick to it even when you don't feel like it. Especially when you don't feel like it. That's when discipline is forged. Too often people chase motivation and ignore momentum, but real growth is boring. It's doing the same thing every day when no one is clapping. It's mastering the basics so well that they become instinct, and it's trusting that the invisible work you're doing now will show up later in ways you can't yet see. Your routine should anchor you. When life gets loud, it should bring you back to center. When emotions flare, it should hold you steady. It should be designed not just for what you want to accomplish, but for the kind of person you want to become. Because every habit is a vote for your future identity, and when you cast enough votes, the transformation becomes inevitable. This is also where most people fail. They build routines for their best days, not their real days. They aim too high, crash, and quit. But the Stoic doesn't aim for perfection. They aim for resilience. Build something sustainable, something honest, something that survives your bad moods, your tired mornings, your uninspired afternoons. That's how you win. Not with bursts, but with rhythm. And yes, life will try to interrupt you. People will ask for your time. Emergencies will pop up. But when your routine is rooted in clarity and aligned with purpose, you won't be shaken. You'll adapt without collapsing. That's the mark of an unbreakable system. It bends, but it doesn't break. So take control. Audit your day. Design it like it matters, because it does. No more vague goals. No more, I'll see how I feel. Build a routine that's so tied to your identity, missing it feels like betrayal. That's when you know you've locked in, because in the end, Greatness isn't a moment, it's a pattern, and your routine is the blueprint. Mastering emotional control and self-discipline. Most people are slaves to their emotions. They react without thinking. They speak before reflecting. They act on impulse and call it authenticity. But what they don't realize is that uncontrolled emotion is the fastest way to destroy your own progress. One moment of anger, one hour of distraction, one day of laziness. That's all it takes to undo weeks, even months, of steady growth. And the Stoics knew this. That's why they believed emotional control isn't just a virtue, it's a form of strength, a discipline of the mind that separates the powerful from the powerless. We live in a world that glorifies expression and neglects restraint. Say how you feel. Let it out. Don't hold back. These are the messages we hear every day, but what they fail to mention is that emotions, left unchecked, will lie to you. They will trick you into burning bridges, abandoning goals, and surrendering to temporary moods that have no place in long-term vision. Emotional control is not about suppression, it's about awareness. It's recognizing the emotion as it rises, and choosing not to let it dictate your behavior. It's pausing before the reaction. It's questioning the impulse. It's stepping outside yourself for just long enough to ask, will this move bring me closer to who I want to be, or further away? The Stoics trained for this, every day. They didn't wait for crises to test them. They prepared their minds in advance. Marcus Aurelius journaled about his emotions, observed them, studied them. He didn't deny them, but he didn't obey them blindly either. That's the practice. To become so aware of your inner world that nothing surprises you. Not fear, not anger, not desire. You acknowledge it, and then you decide. Self-discipline grows from this exact mindset. It's not a punishment, it's a promise. A commitment to yourself that your feelings will not sabotage your values. That just because you feel tired doesn't mean you'll skip your responsibilities. That just because you feel offended doesn't mean you'll lash out. That just because something feels good now doesn't mean it belongs in your life. Discipline means doing what's right, not what's easy. It means showing up when it's inconvenient. It means building habits that align with your principles, not your moods, because moods change, values don't. But here's the hard part. Mastering emotion and discipline happens in silence. No one sees the inner battles you fight. No one claps when you resist that destructive urge. No one cheers when you choose restraint over release. But you will feel it. Over time, you'll begin to notice a shift. You'll stop overreacting. You'll stop needing validation. You'll stop chasing the quick fix. You'll move differently, think differently, decide differently. That's the mark of control. It's not loud. It's not flashy. It's solid. And the irony, the more you master your emotions, the more emotionally free you become. You stop fearing discomfort. You stop running from hard conversations. You stop avoiding failure. You begin to live on your terms, not at the mercy of inner chaos. Think about it. How many times have you said something you regret because you were angry? How many times have you delayed your goals because you didn't feel like working? How many moments of weakness have stolen months of progress? These aren't small things. These are the moments that shape the direction of your life, and they're avoidable, not by chance, but by choice. The path forward is simple, but not easy. You must become the observer of your own mind. You must sit with your discomfort long enough to understand it. You must build rituals that ground you: journaling, meditation, daily reflection, physical training. Not because these things are trendy, but because they give you space between impulse and action. And above all, you must remember this. The strongest man is not the one who never feels emotion, but the one who never lets emotion rule him. So ask yourself, who's in control right now? Your discipline or your desire? Your reason or your reaction? Your future self or your current mood? Because the man who can master himself, his thoughts, his feelings, his behaviors, is the man who becomes unstoppable, not just in moments of strength, but especially in moments of weakness. Reinventing your identity from the ground up. There comes a point in life when improvement isn't enough, when adding a few good habits, reading a few books, or tweaking your routine no longer scratches the surface. Because what you're dealing with isn't a behavioral issue, it's an identity crisis. You've changed the clothes, the schedule, the diet, but deep down, you're still operating on an outdated sense of self. And no matter how much you try to evolve, the identity you haven't rebuilt will always pull you back into patterns that no longer fit. The truth is, you cannot build a new life on top of an old self-image. You can't become disciplined while still believing you're lazy. You can't become confident while still holding on to stories of weakness. You can't live with strength while still identifying as someone who is constantly working on it. Reinvention doesn't mean polishing the edges. It means starting from the ground up. That's why the Stoics didn't talk about becoming someone else. They talked about becoming yourself, your true self, the one beneath the layers of social conditioning, fear, guilt, and false narratives. Marcus Aurelius didn't say, "Pretend to be brave." He said, "Waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one." That means stop thinking in terms of effort and start thinking in terms of essence. So how do you do it? You begin by stripping everything away, every label you've accepted, every identity you've adopted out of survival or conformity. "I'm just not good with people. I've always had bad habits. I'm not a morning person." These aren't facts. They're permissions you've granted yourself, permissions that shape your decisions, limit your actions, and create your reality. You start asking harder questions. Who told me this is who I am? Where did I learn this limitation? What am I gaining by holding on to this version of myself? And what would happen if I let it go? This process is uncomfortable. It requires killing off the parts of yourself that have felt like home, parts that might have protected you once, but now sabotage you daily. The self-pity, the passive voice, the subtle self-sabotage that shows up as procrastination, excuses, and hesitation. These things aren't you. They're the mask, and it has to come off. Reinvention isn't about becoming someone new. It's about remembering who you are beneath the noise, beneath the doubt, beneath the labels. It's about choosing with radical clarity what kind of man you will be, and aligning your thoughts, behaviors, and decisions with that version every single day. Start small, but start deliberately. If the man you're becoming is focused, wake up with focus. If he's calm, speak with calm. If he's powerful, walk with power, even if it feels unnatural at first. Because repetition creates familiarity, and familiarity becomes identity. But you have to stop negotiating with the old you. Stop checking in with your past to validate your future. The past is a reference point, not a rule book. You owe that old version of you nothing except the courage to move on. Because if you keep identifying with your wounds, your mistakes, and your failures, you'll keep recreating them in different forms. It's also important to be alone in this process, not because others are bad, but because their version of you is often frozen in time. They remember the you who joked too much, gave too little, tried too hard to be liked. They don't see the transformation, they see the history. And if you're not careful, you'll keep playing the same role in a play you no longer want to be part of. So reinvent from solitude. Let the silence teach you. Let your daily actions, not your announcements, be the proof of who you're becoming. You don't have to explain it, just embody it. When your walk changes, your world will too. Reinvention requires ritual, morning routines, daily reflections, physical training, silent walks. These aren't just habits. They're the tools you use to chisel away at the false self, to reveal the core. And once that core is uncovered, protect it, nourish it, live by it. So the question is, are you still building your future from the broken parts of your past? Or are you ready to burn the blueprint and design a new architecture from your values, your vision, and your truth? Because your identity is not fixed, it is forged, and the fire you walk through now will become the light that guides you forward. The art of self-reliance. There's a kind of peace that only comes when you stop expecting the world to save you. When you realize that no mentor, no partner, no friend, not even the most well-meaning one, can carry your burden for you. They can listen, they can guide, they can support, but they cannot walk your path. That's the essence of self-reliance. It's not isolation, it's not arrogance. It's the quiet strength of knowing that your foundation must be built by your own hands, or it will never hold. Most people don't want to hear that. They want rescue. They want shortcuts. They want someone else to understand them so deeply that they don't have to understand themselves. But real growth doesn't work like that. It demands responsibility. Full, brutal, radical responsibility. Not just for your wins, but for your mistakes, for your choices, for your mindset. Because the moment you outsource your power, you've already lost it. The Stoics were clear on this. Epictetus taught that while we can't control what happens to us, we always control our response. That's not just philosophy, it's a blueprint for independence. It means you don't need perfect conditions to build a powerful life. You need discipline, you need clarity, and above all, you need the courage to depend on no one but yourself. But let's be clear, self-reliance doesn't mean pushing everyone away. It means no longer needing them to validate who you are. It means being complete with or without applause, with or without company, with or without comfort. It's about learning to sit in silence and know that you are enough, not because you've arrived, but because you're showing up for yourself every single day. That doesn't come naturally. We've been trained to depend on others for emotional safety, for motivation, for identity. We tie our worth to relationships, careers, achievements, all of which can vanish overnight. And when they do, most people collapse. Not because they're weak, but because they never learned how to stand alone. That's what makes self-reliance so powerful. It's unshakable. It's not built on circumstances. It's built on internal stability. You don't need a lucky break. You don't need perfect timing. You need to wake up, make a plan, and execute it, even when no one believes in you, even when no one sees the effort, even when the results are slow, because that kind of consistency, that kind of inner fire, it compounds. When you're truly self-reliant, you become immune to manipulation. You no longer chase approval. You no longer shrink to fit in. You don't fear rejection because your self-worth isn't rented from other people's opinions. It's owned, and no one can repossess it but you. But here's the part most people miss. Self-reliance is a skill. It's not something you're born with. It's something you build. One choice at a time. when you keep the promises you make to yourself, when you do the hard things, even when no one's watching, when you choose discipline over distraction. These small private victories, they're how you earn your own trust. You stop saying, "I hope I can do it," and start saying, "I will figure it out." That shift from wishing to deciding is the birth of inner power. It's the moment you stop waiting for motivation and start creating momentum. And the beauty of this kind of power, it's quiet. It doesn't need to be flaunted. It doesn't shout. It doesn't demand attention. It just moves with intention, with clarity, with purpose. And in time, people feel it. They sense it. They respect it, even if they can't explain it. So if you feel alone right now, good. That means you've stopped leaning on what's weak. That means you're standing at the edge of who you were and who you can become. Don't retreat. Don't beg to be saved. Building from within, slowly, daily, relentlessly. Because when you master the art of self-reliance, you don't just survive without others. You become someone they can rely on, not because you need to, but because you can. Turning pain into power. Pain is inevitable. It visits every life, every mind, every heart. But what makes the difference between the broken and the unbreakable isn't how much pain they experience, it's what they do with it. Most people try to escape it, numb it, hide it. They distract themselves with pleasure, noise, validation. But the Stoic doesn't run. The Stoic looks pain in the face and asks, "What are you here to teach me?" Because pain, when faced directly, is not just suffering. It's signal. It points to where the work must be done. It reveals where you're still wounded, where you're still attached, where you're still weak. And in that way, pain isn't an enemy. It's a guide. We've been trained to avoid discomfort at all costs, to see it as failure, as something shameful. But the Stoics flipped that idea completely. They taught that pain is part of the process, not something to resist, but something to use. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "The impediment to action advances action. What stands in the way becomes the way." That's not poetry. That's instruction. The very thing you think is blocking you is the material from which your strength will be built. Turning pain into power begins with surrender, not to weakness, but to the truth. You stop pretending you're fine. You stop masking your wounds with distractions. You admit, "This hurts. This situation broke something in me." And then you ask, "What now? Will I let this define me? Or will I use it to redesign myself?" It doesn't matter whether your pain comes from betrayal, loss, failure, or regret. What matters is how you carry it. Most people carry pain like a weight. It slows them down, bends their posture, makes them bitter, suspicious, afraid. But the Stoic carries it like armor, not to close themselves off, but to remind themselves what they've endured and what they've survived. And survival is just the beginning. The real transformation happens when you extract meaning from the experience. When you say, "Because of this pain, I now know who I am. I now know what I will never tolerate again. I now know what I value, what I protect, what I fight for." That's power. Power that isn't borrowed from others or based on circumstances, but forged within. Think about it. Some of the strongest, most grounded people you know didn't become that way by accident. They were forged in fire. They were humiliated, dismissed, abandoned. They lost people. They lost dreams. But instead of falling apart, they built something, a mindset, a system, a philosophy. They turned their heartbreak into hunger, their sorrow into strength, their silence into wisdom. You can do the same, But only if you stop negotiating with pain, only if you stop asking, why me, and start asking, what now, only if you sit with the discomfort long enough to let it mold you. Most people quit too soon. They escape before the pain has finished its work. But if you endure it, not just passively but with purpose, you emerge sharper, clearer, wiser, hungrier. Pain also reveals who's real. In times of ease, everyone claps, everyone calls. But in pain, you see the truth. You see who stays. You see what habits crumble and what beliefs hold. Pain strips away the non-essential. And while that process feels brutal in the moment, it's a blessing. It gives you a cleaner slate, a deeper understanding, a higher standard. And most importantly, it gives you perspective. Because once you've been through real pain and risen from it, the little things stop shaking you. You don't panic over failure. You don't chase approval. You don't fear discomfort. You've been there. You've survived worse. And now you walk with a quiet kind of authority, earned, not borrowed. So if you're hurting right now, good. That means there's work to be done. That means there's power to be claimed. Don't run, don't numb, don't hide. Go deeper, feel it, learn from it, use it. Because pain, when owned, becomes purpose. And purpose, when acted on, becomes power. The kind of power no one can take from you. Developing a relentless work ethic. There's something sacred about a man who shows up every day. No excuses, no applause, no drama. Just consistent, focused work. Not because he's driven by external rewards, but because he's made a vow to himself. A vow to become something more than average. In a world addicted to comfort, shortcuts and hacks, this kind of work ethic is rare. And because it's rare, it's powerful. But let's be clear, work ethic isn't just about how many hours you grind. It's not about sacrificing sleep for hustle or burning yourself out to impress others. A relentless work ethic is deeper than that. It's not loud. It's not performative. It's internal. It's built on a quiet, immovable conviction that the work must be done, whether you feel like it or not, because the future you want isn't going to build itself. The Stoics knew this long before it became a motivational slogan. They saw work as a duty, a calling, not something to be celebrated on social media, but something that forges character. Marcus Aurelius ruled an empire, yet still carved out time each morning to reflect, to write, to discipline his mind. He didn't wait for motivation. He created systems, structure. And most importantly, he showed up even when the world around him was falling apart. You need that kind of discipline. Not the kind that looks good for a few weeks, but the kind that survives boredom, frustration, setbacks. A relentless work ethic is forged in those moments when the results are invisible, when no one notices your effort, when nothing seems to be moving, but you move anyway. You wake up tired, but you show up. You don't feel inspired, but you do the task. You fail, but you return stronger. Because work ethic is a decision, not a feeling. A decision to become immune to excuses, to rise above distraction, and to align your daily actions with your highest standard, not your current mood. But most people don't make that decision. They wait to be in the zone. They wait until they feel like it. And that's exactly why they stay stuck. Waiting to feel ready is the enemy of momentum. The truth is, the zone is created by doing the work, not the other way around. You want to know what builds confidence? It's not affirmations or positive thinking. It's following through. It's keeping your word to yourself. It's knowing that when you say you'll do something, you do it. Period. That's where self-respect grows. That's where identity shifts. That's how you go from someone who tries to someone who executes. And execution doesn't mean perfection. You'll miss sometimes, you'll stumble. But the relentless worker doesn't seek flawless results. He seeks alignment. He seeks integrity. He asks himself each night, did I move forward today? And even if it's just one inch, he knows it matters, because compounded effort always outpaces sudden bursts. That's another key. Most people think they need giant leaps, life-changing moves. But in reality, the most powerful transformations come from relentless small steps. Day after day, hour after hour, a routine that sharpens, not exhausts, a rhythm that sustains, not breaks. That's what makes work ethic unstoppable. It doesn't burn out, it builds up. And yes, there will be people who don't understand it, who call it obsession, who say you need to chill. Let them talk, let them sleep in, let them scroll, let them waste their years chasing shortcuts. Because while they play, you build. And in 5 years, the difference won't just be visible, it'll be undeniable. But none of this matters if you don't choose it, if you don't take full ownership of your time, your habits, your craft. No one's coming to push you. No one's going to check if you stayed disciplined today. This is between you and you. And that's what makes it powerful. So ask yourself, what would your life look like if you stopped waiting to feel like working and just committed to working no matter what? What would happen if you applied pressure every day with purpose? Because the man who develops a relentless work ethic doesn't just reach his goals, he becomes the kind of man who cannot be stopped. The mindset of those who never quit. There's a quiet fire inside certain people. You won't always see it in their words or even in their posture, but it's there, in the way they show up when others walk away, in the way they keep moving forward long after motivation has faded, in the way they refuse to quit, not because it's easy, but because they've made something very clear to themselves. This is not optional. The mindset of those who never quit is not built on hype. It's not about being fearless. In fact, they feel fear. They feel doubt. They have moments where everything feels like it's falling apart. But here's the difference. They keep going anyway. They've trained themselves to see resistance not as a reason to stop, but as a sign they're exactly where they need to be. Stoicism is the foundation of this mindset. It teaches that life is not supposed to be easy, and more importantly, that ease is not the goal. The goal is resilience. Seneca once wrote, "Difficulties strengthen the mind as labor does the body." That's not just a poetic truth, it's a brutal one. The people who never quit have embraced difficulty as part of their identity. Not something to avoid, but something to use. And it all begins with one decision: to stop expecting the path to be smooth. When you expect struggle, you prepare for it. When you know it's coming, you don't panic when it arrives. You lean in, you breathe through it, and you remind yourself, this is the price of growth. Most people quit because they thought it would be easier. The unstoppable ones never made that mistake. But grit alone isn't enough. What really separates those who never quit is clarity. They know what they're fighting for. They have a reason that pulls them forward, even on the days they want to disappear. And that reason is bigger than comfort, bigger than ego, bigger than excuses. It might be freedom. It might be redemption. It might be proving to themselves that they are no longer the person they used to be. Whatever it is, it anchors them. So when life gets heavy, they don't float. They root. They stop negotiating with emotion. They stop chasing motivation. They rely on their standard, not their feelings. That's the Stoic mindset. To act, not because the moment is perfect, but because the action is necessary. And here's the hard truth. Sometimes you won't see results. Not for weeks, not for months, maybe not even for years. But the ones who never quit don't measure progress only in outcomes. They measure it in alignment. In the internal, knowing that they are doing what must be done, regardless of recognition, regardless of praise. They aren't building for applause, they're building for impact, quietly, relentlessly. They also understand that quitting doesn't always look like giving up. Sometimes it looks like compromise, like distraction, like perfectionism, like endlessly preparing instead of doing. The relentless ones see through those traps. They've learned to spot the moment their mind tries to trick them, and they answer with action. They don't need to feel ready. They just need to begin. And when they fall, and they do, they don't stay down. They extract the lesson. They reset. They return, not with shame, but with sharpened resolve. Because to them, failure is just another rep, another brick, another lesson. They don't internalize it. They integrate it. The mindset of those who never quit is rooted in this belief. I may not be the most talented, the fastest, or the smartest, but I will be the last one standing, and that belief becomes prophecy. Because every day, they prove it to themselves. Through effort, through sacrifice, through decisions made in silence, when no one else would have blamed them for quitting. So ask yourself, what's your threshold for quitting? Where do you usually stop? And more importantly, what version of yourself is waiting on the other side of that limit? Because if you can cross that line once, you start to redefine your identity. You stop being the person who tries and start becoming the person who finishes again and again, no matter what. The world may not reward you immediately, but one day it will look at everything you've built and call it discipline, call it strength, call it success. But you'll know what it really is. It's refusal, it's patience, it's grit, it's the quiet fire that whispered, keep going. You don't rebuild yourself by accident. You don't wake up one day and become the person you've always admired. It takes intention, it takes sacrifice, it takes silence, solitude, and an unshakable commitment to becoming someone no one else sees yet. But you do. And that vision, that inner standard, is all you need. The old you served a purpose, but he's no longer invited to the future you're building. The version that tolerated disrespect, delayed dreams, broke promises to himself, and made excuses out of fear, he's done. Not because you hate him, but because you've outgrown him. Because the next chapter doesn't need his survival, it needs your evolution. This episode wasn't about quick fixes. It wasn't about motivation. It was about reminding you of something deeper, that power lives in destruction, that strength is born from walking alone. That transformation only happens when you are brave enough to let go of people, patterns, thoughts, comforts, and every soft excuse that kept you safe, but stagnant. Now you know. Now you've seen what's possible when you burn the old identity and begin again with ruthless clarity. Not with fear, not with hesitation, but with the firm belief that what you build from this moment forward will be stronger, cleaner, and more aligned than anything you've ever lived before. So the choice is yours. Will you carry the weight of the man you used to be? Or will you bury him and rise? Either way, your future is watching.